Sporty greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
He's having fun. I just think he's a natural for the game. He sees the game very well. Has good instincts on getting in good spots, especially his running. Off the ball is exceptional. As he gets a little bit better and a little bit more experience, I think his ability to be a playmaker or a better passer of the ball in the last half of the field will improve. But he's certainly an exceptional talent.
That's Bruce Arena, the head coach of the U.S. men's national soccer team, commenting on his 18-year-old star, Christian Pulisic. Borussia Dortmund boy Pulisic scored 2 second-half goals to propel the USA to a 2-0 victory over visiting Trinidad and Tobago in a 2018 World Cup qualifier played near Denver, Colorado. With the victory, the USA moved into third place in its CONCACAF World Cup qualifying group with 7 points from 5 matches. Mexico, which beat visiting Honduras Thursday night 3-0, is in first place with 13 points. Costa Rica, which played to a goalless draw at home with Panama, is in second place with 8 points. The top 3 teams in this group will qualify for next year's World Cup in Russia, and the fourth place team will advance to a 2-leg playoff against an Asian opponent in November. After beating Trinidad and Tobago, Coach Bruce Arena and the Americans are now focusing on Mexico. The U.S. team will travel to Mexico City to play their regional rival on Sunday in another World Cup qualifying match. While the USA beat Mexico 5 years ago 1-0 in a friendly match at Mexico City's Azteca Stadium, the Americans have never beaten the Mexicans in Azteca in a full-fledged competitive game. At the post-match news conference Thursday night, Coach Arena was asked by a Mexican reporter if he thinks it's the best chance for the USA to win for the first time in Azteca.
I don't know if it's the best time, but we're sure going to try. You know, Mexico has had an outstanding start to the hex. They have a great team. We all know that playing in Azteca is very difficult. We know the issues with the altitude and all those challenges. And, you know, I think because we got 3 points tonight, I think we can go there a little bit relaxed and try to have a good tactical approach to the game and try to come out of there with at least a point.
That's Bruce Arena, the head coach of the U.S. men's national soccer team. And he was speaking at a news conference near Denver, Colorado. Getting back to 18-year-old Christian Pulisic, he's now scored 4 goals in his past 4 appearances for the USA and 7 goals in 15 matches since joining the senior national team 15 months ago. Because of his age, Pulisic was eligible to play for the USA, but didn't, at the FIFA Under-20 World Cup in South Korea. Pulisic is now proving to be one of the young engines for the senior national team as it tries to qualify for an 8th consecutive FIFA World Cup in Russia next year. Elsewhere, the Saudi Arabian Football Federation has apologized after its national team did not properly observe a minute's silence for the victims of the recent London attacks before the start of their World Cup qualifier in Australia on Thursday. The Saudi players, although silent, continued to jog and stretch as the Australian team lined up in the center circle ahead of the match in Adelaide. The Socceroos of Australia won the 2018 World Cup qualifier 3-2 with Tommy Jurich scoring two goals for the Aussies. After the match, two other Socceroos, Ryan McGowan and Matthew Leckie, spoke with reporters about the actions of the Saudi players before kickoff. First, we'll hear from McGowan and then Leckie.
More importantly for us as a team, we wanted to show our respects for the two that lost their lives and make sure that we did the right thing. And what they did, we don't really have any control over that. So we just wanted to make sure that we did it and we observed it properly.
Yeah, obviously we saw what was going on, but like Gaza said, really just trying to concentrate in that minute to show our respects. And for us, it was important. And what they did was, we were more focused on that.
Eight people were killed and 50 injured after three Muslim militants drove into pedestrians on the London Bridge June 3rd, then attacked people nearby with knives. Two of the dead were Australian. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull said on Friday that he had not seen video of the incident at the World Cup qualifier in Adelaide, but he did issue this statement.
The whole world, the whole free world, is united in condemnation of that terrorist attack and terrorism generally, and in sympathy and love for the victims and their families. The heartbreaking, heartbreaking loss of young Australians in London, of course in Baghdad, and just this week in Melbourne, to these murderous terrorists. Everyone should be united in condemnation of the terrorists and love and sympathy and respect for the victims and their families. Thanks very much.
Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull. African football fans are looking forward to a big weekend of qualifying matches for the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Cameroon. There are 24 qualifiers scheduled across the continent. In one of the marquee matchups, Nigeria will host South Africa. Reporter Samson Omale has a preview of that game, as well as other sports news.
In Nigeria, the match between Bafana Bafana of South Africa and the Super Eagles of Nigeria at the Oyo International Stadium on Saturday has been rated as one of the top clash of the tournament qualifier this year. Bafana Bafana coach Stuart Baxter believes that in football, nothing is impossible, especially when the record between Nigeria and South Africa skewed in the favor of Nigeria.
I don't think you should be intimidated by anybody. There are too many examples in football of David beating Goliath. So this is not a David and Goliath, but Nigeria's home. They're a very strong nation, and obviously they'll start as favourites. But intimidated, no.
Olympic silver medalist Helen Obiri beat reigning world 1,500 meters champion Genzebe Dibaba to win the 5,000 meters race at the Rome Diamond League in a national record time of 14 minutes, 18.37 seconds, the fastest time in the world this year. On the way to setting the world lead, Obiri took almost 4 seconds off her personal best time over the distance, a huge morale booster as she prepares for the national trials ahead of the IWAF World Athletics Championships in London come August. In the men's 3,000 meters steeplechase, Kenyan Olympic champion Conseslus Kipruto held off a late challenge for Moroccan Sofiane El Bakkali to win his first race of the season, crossing the line in a world lead time of 8 minutes 4.63 seconds. El Bakkali came home second in a personal best time of 8 minutes 5.17 seconds, while Jairus Birea narrowly peeped world junior champion Amos Kiriu to third. Kiriu had given Conseslus a chase up to the final bend when he drained off. In judo news, a Swiss judo trainer and expert, Francois Whale, is currently in Liberia on a 5-day visit to train Liberian judo athletes. Quayle, who is a fifth Dan in judo, arrived in the country based on the invitation of the Vice President of Liberia, Joseph Boakai Sr., who visited Switzerland a few months ago and made the arrangement with the President of the Swiss National Judo Federation, Christian Vuessa. At the first day of training at the Samuel Doe Sports Complex, Francois Will said he is in Liberia on the request of the Vice President to distribute medical consignment and train local judo athletes. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Music Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me, I'm Heather Maxwell, for Music Time in Africa, every Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The National Baseball Hall of Fame will officially welcome five new members next month in Cooperstown, New York. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, reporter Jonah Haskell tells us the Baseball Hall of Fame Class of 2017 is headlined by former stars who played catcher, outfield, and first base.
Joining the ranks of baseball's greatest players is the class of 2017, our first baseman Jeff Bagwell, outfielder Tim Raines, and catcher Ivan Pudge Rodriguez. Bagwell, who spent his entire career with the Houston Astros, was a dominant and consistent hitter, as Hall of Fame president Jeff Idelson pointed out.
Jeff combined power, consistency, getting on base, and an ability to score runs to become one of baseball's premier first basemen, averaging 32 home runs annually, drove in 90 or more runs 10 times, and scored 90 or more runs 10 times as well.
Bagwell could hit for both power and average, as evidenced by his almost 450 career home runs and .297 career batting average, but he also had great discipline at the plate, leading the major leagues in walks in 1999. Bagwell combined all these skills in his debut season when he won the National League Rookie of the Year award, but that was simply a sign of things to come, as Bagwell was named to four All-Star teams and captured the 1994 National League MVP. The Astros first baseman played from 1991 to 2005 when he retired at the age of 37. Bagwell is ecstatic to have made the Hall.
Like I said, it's surreal. Just to be in this situation, to, be in the Hall of Fame, it's crazy, man. And I couldn't be more happy to be here and just trying to take this all in. So thanks.
Joining Bagwell in the Hall of Fame's class of 2017 is outfielder Tim Raines. During his career, Raines, who is from Florida, played for six different teams but spent most of his time with the Montreal Expos, where he used his blinding speed to become a terror on the base paths as he led the National League in stolen bases for 4 years in a row from 1981 to 1984. Jeff Idelson also mentioned how durable Raines was during his career from 1979 to 2002.
Tim Raines was rock solid, playing in 23 seasons, Again, 19,000 have played in the major leagues. Only 20 players played longer than Tim Raines.
Raines was also a strong defensive outfielder, using his blinding speed to cover huge stretches of ground, and he was able to reach baseball's pinnacle in 1996 as a member of the World Series-winning New York Yankees. After being elected in his final year of eligibility, Raines was understandably relieved.
It's an honor. I'm so proud to be here. It's actually something I never really expected as a young kid.
The final player member of the 2017 class was just a young kid when the other two were in the twilights of their careers, but after becoming the first Puerto Rican player ever elected during his first year on the ballot, he is a worthy addition to the group. Iván Pudge Rodríguez, a big catcher from Manatí, Puerto Rico, was one of the best-hitting backstops of all time, as he connected for 311 home runs en route to 14 All-Star selections and the 1999 American League MVP. Pudge was also a masterful defensive catcher with a cannon of an arm that helped him earn 13 American League Golden Glove Awards during his 21 years of service for six different teams. Rodríguez was a member of the World Series champion 2003 Florida Marlins and currently holds the record for the most games caught in a career. Pudge was excited to be going to the Hall of Fame with two players like Bagwell and Raines.
Happy to be here with all of you guys. Being together with two good friends, even though that we never played together, but as a baseball player, we are like a family. Even though that we play against, we respect each other, play the game hard, play the game the right way.
These three outstanding players will be joined in the hall this year by two executives, John Schwerholtz, who led the Kansas City Royals and Atlanta Braves of the 80s and 90s to glory as a general manager, and Bud Selig, commissioner of Major League Baseball during one of its most trying periods, the steroid era. This year's induction ceremony for Bagwell, Raines, and Rodríguez will be held in Cooperstown, New York on July 30th, and they will be joining a very select group.
And in the long history of professional baseball, there have been 19,000 players, just about 19,000 players, who have been talented enough and privileged enough to wear a Major League uniform. And of those 19,000, only 1%, one out of 100, get to the Hall of Fame.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Jonah Haskell in New York.
I'm out at Brooklyn, now I'm down in Tribeca, right next to De Niro, but I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem, all of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pulled me back to that McDonald's, took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus, driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my top. Sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out, I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I most definitely from.
And speaking of New York, I think there's a big horse race in the city this weekend, right, Andrew Palcheski?
There is indeed. It's the third jewel of the U.S. Triple Crown of horse racing, the Belmont Stakes, taking place in New York. Very interesting this year. Always a little unfortunate when we don't have the same horse that wins the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, because by the time you get to the Belmont, you're guaranteed that you're not going to have a Triple Crown winner. And so it's a bit unusual that neither Always Dreaming, who won the Kentucky Derby, nor Cloud Computing, who won the Preakness, are going to be running in this Belmont Stakes. So a little odd that we won't have those two winners trying to win two out of the three. They're happy enough that they won one, so they're going to sit it out and say, cut our losses, and we've done quite well. But, Sonny, I am proud to announce and pleased to announce to all our listeners that our favorite horse, Patch will be back in the running at the Belmont Stakes. Of course, to remind our listeners, Patch is that horse who lost his left eye due to an infection, so he is running with one eye. Bit of a story at the Kentucky Derby because he got the number 20 post all the way on the outside, so he couldn't see anybody running. Well, Patch is running from the outside post, the far outside number 12 post at the Belmont Stakes. So another instance where he won't see the rest of the field, although he's had one race where he hasn't been able to see anybody. So maybe he can improve on his standing in the Kentucky Derby.
Now, for our VOA listeners who might not be familiar with this Triple Crown of U.S. thoroughbred horse racing, the Belmont is the longest of the three in terms of distance.
I believe it is, yes. It starts out with the Kentucky Derby, I believe it's a mile and a quarter, and then it's a mile and 3/16 of a mile for the Preakness, a little bit shorter than a quarter, and I believe it's about a mile and a half.
That sounds right,
for the Belmont Stakes. So that's why a lot of times when you get to this third leg or the third jewel of the Triple Crown, that's where you see a lot of these horses that have won the first two fade away because they're not used to running. Even that extra quarter of a mile can make all the difference.
Would Jay-Z be at the Belmont? I know he's a sports fan, but I don't know about being a horse racing fan.
You know, I wouldn't I wouldn't be surprised to see him maybe at the Belmont. We could see him perhaps at the NBA Finals, or I wouldn't even be surprised to see him at the French Open. I know he goes to the U.S. Open, especially when Serena Williams is playing. I know that he and his wife Beyonce are good friends with Serena, so he's got a lot of options and a lot of money to fly around on a private jet to get to probably all of them if he wanted to.
You mentioned the French Open, Andrew. What's happening in Paris?
Well, we are set with one of the men's semifinals. Tight four sets from Stan Wawrinka and Andy Murray. Took him about 4 hours to play those four sets, going to a deciding fifth set, and that one only took him about a half hour. Murray dropping that set 6-1. And you look at the scoreline, it's pretty amazing. Murray going down the first set 6-7, 6-3, 5-7, 7-6, so back and forth, and he loses that last set. So as we talked about earlier in the week with Novak Djokovic, accusations of tanking, or maybe not trying very hard, a lot of questions about that with Andy Murray in this last set, losing 6-1. People saying that it was just such a physical match. By that point, they had already played for 4 hours. That maybe a little different than Novak Djokovic losing in straight sets. Maybe Murray had just tired down. To his credit, Murray in the press conference afterwards said that he's very proud of the tournament that he had. He came in kind of struggling, and he was one break away from getting to the final. So, unfortunately for Andy Murray, he does not make a repeat appearance in the final, but he's proud of what he did on the clay this year. Then on the other side of that, we have, of course, Stan Wawrinka. He is the 2015 French Open winner back in the final, so we are excited to see him. A little bit of controversy at the French Open with this match because it went for so long. This is the first year at the French Open where they're doing two different tickets to get to each of the two men's semifinals. Usually in previous years, you could have one ticket and see both of the matches. So because of those two tickets, they had to clear everybody out from this match, get everybody in for the Rafael Nadal-Dominic team match. And there was some concern because that court is not lit that if that match ran long, they may not be able to finish Rafael Nadal and Dominic Thiem. They may not be able to finish that semifinal today. They might have to go into tomorrow. So a lot of question marks there. We'll see how that semifinal plays out. And then, of course, on the women's side tomorrow, we have Yelena Ostapenko, number 47 in the world. Not for long. She's going to be in close to the top 20 after this tournament, playing world number 3 Simona Halep, who, if she wins, she will be the new world number 1.
Andrew, earlier this week, you mentioned Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, arguably the two most famous soccer players in the world. And they're also making headlines on the business side, I understand.
They are indeed. And we're going to talk about this on Monday. The Forbes magazine has released its list of the top 100 top-earning athletes worldwide. I will not give away where Ronaldo and Messi are in the list, other to say they are very high up on the list, and I will not say which has gotten the best of which. One of them is a couple spots higher than the other. Our fans are going to have to listen in on Monday to find out about that. And the other teaser, there is only one woman on the list, so we'll talk about that too on Monday.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Sonny.
And that wraps up the June 9th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Peter Hundley. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
One of the world's most promising and, in terms of economy, fastest-growing regions, sub-Saharan Africa, is under attack by transnational criminal networks. Corruption is one of their major weapons. Corruption is an abuse of power at every level that impacts rich and poor countries alike in both the private and public sectors. Corruption destroys trust, undermines development, and erodes confidence in democratic institutions. It distorts markets, causes higher prices, discourages investors, and stunts economic growth. And it is particularly destructive to communities in developing countries, where it blocks development and progress. As the criminal networks see it, you must spend money to make money, and that goes double for corruption. And transnational crime is tremendously lucrative, accounting for 8% to 15% of the world gross domestic product. Hundreds of millions of dollars every year enable criminals and other threat networks to corrupt the regional economies and the global financial system, said Senior Director for National Security and Diplomacy Anti-Crime Programs at the State Department's Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, David Luna.
The proceeds of drug trafficking and other forms of illicit trafficking are fueling a dramatic increase in corruption among the very institution responsible for fighting crime. The collusion and complicity of some government officials with criminal networks have helped to carve out an illicit trafficking corridor that stretches from West Africa coast to the Horn of Africa, from North Africa south to the Gulf of Guinea.
Across these illicit routes, bad actors and networks are corrupting critical institutions and enforcement systems that endanger everyone's security, said David Luna. The United States is determined, in cooperation with our partners in Africa, to disrupt and dismantle transnational organized crime networks. In support of President Donald Trump's executive order on transnational criminal organizations, the United States will continue to assist our partners to strengthen their capabilities to combat today's threat networks, said Mr. Luna. We must crack down on corruption at all levels and cut off the ability of kleptocrats, criminals, and terrorists to enjoy the fruits of illicit enterprise and that enable the financial capacity to execute their operations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
VOA News.
VOA. When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.